Muddy Knees Media.
Yesterday, it's part two of our Totty football show as we salute a player who was as eternal as his home city and as grande as the Raccordo Anulare, Francesco Totti. Welcome back, everybody, to Golazzo and the Francesco Totti story. Yes, it's 2006. Last 16 of the World Cup in Germany. Italy playing Australia, heading for extra time. But oh my word, Fabio Grosso goes down. And all of a sudden, there's a spot kick awarded for the Azzurri. Up steps Francesco Totti. Totti, whose impact on the tournament hasn't been huge.
That's understandable. Hmm. He raced back from an injury which he suffered in February, which I think usually takes, again, it's one of those things where they say it usually takes 7 months to recover.
Right.
And he's back 90 days later.
With metal plates in his leg.
Yeah, he only, I think, plays one game before joining up with the national team, which is the second leg of the Coppa Italia final against Inter, not the one in which he kicks Balotelli. And yeah, he's got 13... screws in his leg. You mentioned the metal plate, and I think it's kind of understandable. But the thing is, he always says that Lippi from day one was, you know, by his bedside saying, "You will go to the World Cup."
It must have been scary waking up to that.
Well, the thing is, he again says his relationship with Lippi. Apparently, like when Lippi got the job in 2004 after the European Championships, Totti's injured, misses the first friendly or first game. He's then injured again for the next one, and basically Lippi says, "Right, I want you to come to Palermo. We're preparing for our game. I want to have a talk with you." And Totti's like, "Oh Jesus, what have I done now? This is not good." And he goes there, and Lippi basically says, "You're our star. You're my guy." And Totti's kind of jaw is on the floor. And Lippi's like that throughout with him. And apparently Lippi, during training sessions for this World Cup, sends everyone to the showers after a training session, says, "Totti, stay back with me. We're going to see if you can still play football." And has him shoot at goal and do things like that. And Lippi's literally physically himself, manually picking up the balls. And he's like, you know, knackered after each one of these training sessions because he's chasing the ball. So Lippi was always... You're coming.
And it all comes good in that moment. So Totti steps up and it's a crucial moment. And Totti's eyes, the director just does this extreme close-up for about 30 seconds on Totti's eyes as he waits for the referee to give him the go. And there's never any doubt.
Just visually, I was in Germany. I was not at that game. I watched it on television. And I remember it so clearly, that shot. That's just genius direction.
There you go, a crucial goal.
Because they couldn't go to extra time. That was the feeling because they were down to 10 men because Gab's mate, Marco Materazzi, had got sent off.
Sent off for tackling his own teammate, I might add.
Further details available in the Golazzo Materazzi special. But yeah, Totti with a part to play, as he did also in the semi-final against Germany. He contributed... to what
he was there.
He was there and he assisted the assist, I think, for Del Piero's goal. And he's part of that. I mean, they're world champions. It's not remembered as being his tournament, but he's part of it. And have you heard that story about the inmate staying in jail so that he could meet him after the World Cup? The Azzurri, or some elements of them, go to visit this prison to kind of do a goodwill, a little bit of social work. And Totti says that there was this guy there and they'd said that he was supposed to leave. He was due to be released the week before, but he told them he wanted to stay 1 week later because he'd heard that Totti would be going there. And he told them, "If you make me leave, I will do something crazy to be sent back here." Anyway, wonderful stuff.
It's almost as good as the story that time at Gianfranco Zola was talked and almost kidnapped.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Again, listen to that episode.
Yeah, the Zola episode. Summer 2006 then, Totti's a world champion. He's won a Scudetto at Roma. He's married the woman of his dreams. He's, what, 29? What worlds could he still have to conquer? Campionato di calcio Italia.
Italiano. You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
What follows, while perhaps not as glorious in terms of titles won, is, as we mentioned at the end of the last podcast, almost the most impressive phase of his career. In his 30s, with his leg held together by screws and a metal plate, with his club increasingly falling apart, just the level of performances that he puts in is quite extraordinary. You could argue that he's about the best 30-something plus footballer that modern football's ever seen.
You can argue he had a full decade
mm-hmm.
in his 30s.
Yeah.
Okay. I defy anybody, and maybe one day Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi will prove me wrong, until they have a full decade in their 30s and achieve in their 30s what Totti achieved in his 30s.
Zero league titles.
Then, you know, then that's where he set the bar. And then he belongs in a conversation with Stanley Matthews and Di Stefano in terms of golden oldies.
Right. 2006-07, following the World Cup, Totti produces in goal terms his best season ever. He wins the European Golden Boot. He has 26 goals in Serie A, another six in the Champions League, and 15 assists as well. Roma.
I mean, I think the astonishing thing about that is that no Italian had ever won that until the year before, when Luca Toni did it as part of that Fiorentina team. And now five, six different players every season in Serie A score.
Even freaking Ciro Immobile does it more than once.
But back then, you know, it's still very rare. I mean, he wins the Golden Shoe with 26 goals again, yeah. Which you think this is just as Messi's beginning to come into the team at Barcelona, just when things start to change and get silly when two players start scoring, 50 goals a season?
Right.
Before the paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Roma finished second that year behind Inter, as was their wont, but they do win the Coppa Italia with the two legs against the Nerazzurri, one of those legs ending in a 6-2 victory at home. It's a similar story the following year. The following year with Claudio Ranieri now in charge is when they come within about 45 minutes of actually taking the title.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. On the Spalletti 2007-2008, goes to the final day there, leading.
But was that under Spalletti still?
Well, there are two. I mean, there's the one where they are in Catania. Vucinic, I think, puts them in front. Inter is still drawing in Parma. And then Zlatan comes off the bench in the rain and scores and spares Mancini's blushes. But Mancini will soon be departed because Mourinho's coming in for him. And then there's obviously the 2009-10 where Cassano comes back to haunt Roma and Totti when that Samp side comes and beats them at the Olimpico, and Marco Sterrari has the best game of his life, and Mexes is on the bench crying because Roma again have come so close. And people forget that about the treble season that Inter had, that yeah. Roma were very, very close.
And people also forget all the people who worship at the altar of the special one, who gets it over the line and blah, 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 doesn't flinch under pressure. That season, they had an 11-point lead, and then suddenly they were a point behind. So you want to talk like mind games against a Roma team that was basically Totti, De Rossi, and a bunch of dudes who, you know, were there by hook or by crook because the financial rot had already set in. They didn't have any money.
As we mentioned in the last podcast, six times in nine seasons, Roma finishing second in Serie A. Quantifying the level of his performances and the context, how difficult it was, you'd had the injury before the 2006 World Cup, you'd had he does his ACL a couple of seasons after that. You've got the level of the team, which had fallen off dramatically. I mean, Marco Borriello, Michael Bradley,
Adriano.
Who else do you have? Yeah. You had some it was a bit of a ragtag ensemble. You had
Luca Toni came back from Bayern.
You had a change in ownership as well. You had a succession of sporting directors. You had countless managerial changes. I think 10 managerial changes through that decade.
I mean, four in one year.
But the tenacity of Totti, which I think is something that doesn't go recognised. This is a player, and you touched on this in the last show, Gabrielli, who'd started playing, got his debut at 16 with Roma, started playing regularly for them at the age of 17. And normally we equate that with players getting burnt out by the end of their 20s. Here he is,
Rooney.
Yeah, steaming into his late 30s and still being an absolute icon, carrying the team.
I mean, to me, it's the physical side of things. I mean, again, you touched it in the last episode about the groundwork, team and the fitness, whether it's that, whether it's this bizarre Vito Scala figure who's Totti's friend, who's also his personal physio and fitness guy. You know, some people came out and said, that's the future, right? Athletes' bodies are such finely tuned machines. They need one guy to train them rather than, you know, having a fitness trainer for the whole club. Right? Whatever it is, whatever it works, whatever it's, whether it's just a determination, whether it's frankly the fact that what else does he know how to do other than play football? It is unbelievable that it lasted so long through so many injuries, through so many setbacks, through so much instability around the club.
Franco Baldini.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember talking to people who told me that essentially when Totti was at, really from about 98 onwards, whenever Totti wanted to leave his house to go somewhere,
right,
he called a police escort. Which led to a whole debate about, is this good use of police time? You know, having police outriders. But if he didn't, he'd be in traffic, and you can imagine he would never get anywhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, the whole business of his idolization in the capital, which forced him and his family to move. I mean, he's touched on that when he talks about...
Well, not out the city, but like, you know, sort of Eur Casalpolocco kind of way.
Right. He says, well, the symbiosis between me and Rome... travels at two different speeds. The city feeds on me, the games, the interviews, all the public appearances, but all I get is one bite of the apple and then I have to disappear. His beautiful city, the city that he loved, the city that he couldn't leave, but at the same time, his success means that he can't actually live in it.
Well, I mean, there was, I think he said this, that he'd never been to or never got to see the Colosseum, aside from, I think, when they win the league title, he gets on a moped and basically goes around late night in Rome. That's another great thing to do. And then, yeah, he went. He needed to get a Christmas present one time for Hillary, and was going to Via del Corso, which is kind of
which
Oxford
is a
Street.
Stupid idea in the first place.
Well, the thing is, so he's like, "Can you send this to my house?" And it's like, "It's Christmas Eve. We can't." And he's like, "Right, I'm going to have to go there." So he gets in his smart car with his son, and he's all kind of, you know, sort of try to camouflage himself. Peaky Blinders kind of style, and forgets that because he lives in a goldfish bowl, everyone knows who his son is. Everyone recognizes his son, so his son's just dressed casual as normal, and they go into the store, they buy this scarf or whatever it is, and then yeah, by the time they come out, there is again 5,000 people there. There's a great story he tells shortly after the Scudetto where they go for a meal in a place in the Aventino on Via Marmarata, which has a balcony overlooking, and his mate runs the joint, but people see him on the balcony, and all of a sudden this massive crowd materializes, and they try and storm the restaurant, and the only way to get out is to climb up one of the embankments on the Albertina, jump over a wall, and they jump over a wall, and there's, you know, it's the place where there's the... is it what, the Paco degli Aranci? You know, the...
Oh, yeah, beautiful.
But he actually jumps into the... It's like a pontifical university there, which is run by the orders of the Knights Templar.
Right, I think it's the Knights of Malta.
Yeah, Knights of Malta. And there is...
That's the one with the famous keyhole, which if you look through, you have the perspective with the St. Peter's at the end.
So he jumps in, it's by that time very late, it's dark, and then a kind of priest comes out and...
In his nightgown?
Apparently, yeah, I think in a nightgown, and he's shouting at them, and then he doesn't think he'll be recognised, and then lo and behold, the priest goes, "Oh, are you Francesco Totti?" And then he says, "I'll open the gate for you." And that gate, that door, is right. The one with Piranesi's keyhole, where you can, if you look through, you can see St. Peter's.
Yeah, perfect. Magnificent. I mean, just to kind of recount some of his exploits, the 2009-10 season, when, as we mentioned, under Ranieri, they push the treble winning Inter right to the end, 24 game unbeaten run there, and famously kicking Balotelli in the Coppa Italia final. He's what, 33 at that point? He's 36 when Zeman returns in 2012-13, and he comes up with 12 goals and 12 assists that season, double figures in both at 36, not bad. 38 when we were both at the Etihad.
Oh, yeah.
To see Roma away at Manchester City, and Francesco Totti, with a wonderful and trademark chip of Joe Hart, becoming the oldest Champions League scorer ever, taking that title from Ryan Giggs, 38 years and 59 days of age.
Soltanto lui! Soltanto! 38 anni!
Soltanto lui ha 38 anni. But even he couldn't go on forever. Gabriele
Inoni. Well, he could. I mean, he wants to. He still is. He's playing eight aside.
Well, we'll get onto that in a second. But 28th of May 2017, Francesco finally hangs up his boots. Roma are playing at home to Genoa. They have a 3-2 home win. He comes on for Mo Salah midway through the second half. And after the final whistle, he gets given the microphone for the goodbye that he and Roma's fans wished would never take place. And my goodness, does he milk it. I mean, he's Francesco Totti, but he's there talking for 12 minutes, rambling on.
Well, it's actually pretty cogent, no?
Is it?
I think it's, I mean, 12
minutes.
Have you got
minutes?
The letter in front of you?
It's
yeah,
very
the letter is powerful. So sweet. Come on. And
yeah, it could have been, he could have got on with it a bit. I'm a huge
fan. It's
not
easy to turn out the light, James.
Well, as he said, I'm scared. I'm scared to turn out the light.
Yeah.
And also the support. I mean, there's so many shots of people in pieces in the stands, and they keep breaking into song. And it's an extraordinary thing. But I feel like maybe 7 or 8 minutes might have been enough.
Well, what's amazing though is people obviously knew that the goodbye would come from the perspective of the club and the club's owner, Jim Pallotta, is like, how do we navigate the transition? What happens when he's no longer there? Somebody who travels to South Africa often made a parallel with...
Name him, Gap.
With Mandela, right? Sort of 20 years ago. What do you do when he's no longer there? You know, who takes over? How do they take over? What will happen? You know, will Pandora's box be reopened? Is he ever going to go away? You know? And...
Yeah, I can imagine him saying that.
Well, because there's always that sense, right? When people hang around too long, and you were in a situation...
Too long or a long time?
I don't think he did hang around too long, personally. But you are in a situation where if Totti does well and Roma win, you're like, oh, look at this crappy club. They don't have any succession plan. They're still relying on 37-year-old Totti. This is rubbish, right? And if Totti does badly... Then for 90% of Roma fans, it's the club's fault for making Totti play badly, which they got a lot of. But for the others, it's kind of like, right, you know, you're alpha male, Jim Pallotta, it's your club, get rid of this guy, move on. You know, there is a future. Roma will still be there once Totti's no longer there. And that's
first
before
year
you
get, without him, they get to the semifinals of the Champions League.
Yeah, and that's before then you get into the whole other issue of once he retires from playing, you're kind of obligated to say there's a role for you at the club.
Right, which was part of his last contract as a player, no, that he would then move.
Well, not his last one, but one that when Rossella Sensi sold to Jim Pallotta, there was always this six-year contract as a director there in a drawer waiting for you.
Okay.
You can keep extending your player's contract, and they would do that because it was clear that the club wanted to move on even before Totti retired, when he did. Again, the clash between Totti and Franco Baldini has been played out quite publicly, certainly in the last year.
Mm.
But even then, there was when Luis Enrique was there, there was the kind of Totti's lazy. There was the, you know, I've wanted to get rid of you, sell you for some time. But my problem is that every time we appoint a new manager, that new manager says, Totti's staying, right? And, you know, that changes when Spalletti comes back for the second time.
Right.
Spalletti doesn't ask that question.
We'll talk about Spalletti in a second, the second stint. But after he hangs up his boots and assumes a managerial role at AS Roma, things don't work out too well. And last summer, 2019, he calls this press conference at CONI, the Olympic Committee headquarters in Rome.
It's symbolic that it's not a Roma territory.
Yeah. And announces his resignation and accuses the chairman, Pallotta, and indeed the club of basically freezing him out from the decision-making process. But since then, he's made other comments. I mean, there's been a whole series of controversies about his activity on social media, but he's publicly said that if he was advising a young Totti now, he'd tell them to steer clear of Roma, which it's an interesting thing to say, and obviously it was pretty inflammatory coming from Totti, of all people, the man who'd been the symbol of Romanisti's hopes and dreams. But how true is that comment? I don't know, given that his own son is 15 and is playing for Roma's under 15.
He accused the club of wanting to kind of cleanse Roma of the Romans.
Right.
Even though, you know, after he retires, De Rossi is captain. And after De Rossi leaves, Florenzi's captain. There's Lorenzo Pellegrini there. As we record, they've just signed Matteo Politano, who's about as Roman as they come. Some of the things he said in that very long statement, if you like, it doesn't add up. And I think it was bitter for both sides,
right,
at it's, the end. It became bitter.
You want him there. You want him playing. You don't want him thinking or talking. I mean, I think this is the general feeling of people involved with Roma, because the clubs make this mistake all the time, right? Whenever we say, oh, look, he's such and such footballer. Well, he's really, really clever. And then you compare it to like real people in the real world, and you're kind of like, all right, this dude left school when he was 15. He can write his name. I don't want to generalize about all footballers, because then you have Frank Lampard, who's an outlier or whatever. But the vast majority is, this guy lived in a goldfish bowl bubble his entire life. Even if he were super intelligent, which he's not, he would need to be super educated as well to actually be a manager type figure at Roma, whether it's some sort of director of football thing or whatever. Even the basic things that you think you would do, which is like, okay, well, what do you think of this player? What do you think of, you know, of this signing we might make? Should we get Jordan Veretout or whatever? What frame of reference could Totti possibly have about Jordan Veretout? If you're Totti, Jordan Veretout is a different species. Other footballers, Cengiz Under is a different species to you. You know, maybe you can give a judgment on Zidane, maybe, but you can't expect people who are so talented and who've had such a one in a zillion life experience, you can't expect them to relate to other human beings, even on the football pitch, from a technical sense. You may be able to tell them, well, I'd like them to do this and that, but it's a completely different skill set.
Although,
right?
Roberto Mancini's had some success with working with other players.
Hold up a second.
Mm-hmm.
Roberto Mancini, first of all, went through a whole apprenticeship.
Right.
And secondly, as you know from the Golazzo podcast on Mancini, that is the single thing that Mancini found toughest at all. And he said he had to unlearn how to be a footballer, and he had to relearn how to be a normal footballer, because otherwise, things that come so natural to him that he never thought about, he realized even other professional footballers are like, oh, wait, I didn't see that pass. Or wait, how do you actually hit the ball 40 yards with the outside of your boot while you're looking the other way and running at a full sprint? Because Mancini can do that, but I can't. You know, it's a journey. I mean, and I think it's why, obviously, there's a whole bunch of very talented footballers who became great managers, although not as many as we generally think. But even the ones who do have generally been on this process.
Okay. And you put Zidane in there as well.
Yeah, I would put Zidane in there, but differently, though.
Okay.
Zidane is not a teacher of football.
Mm-hmm.
Zidane he's Ancelotti without the words or the charm, and maybe with a little more talent.
He basically runs a group of extremely talented players who don't need to learn how to do that stuff.
They know how to play football, right? Rafa Benitez might be more of a teacher.
Right.
But then Rafa Benitez was a slightly inferior.
That's not the situation that Totti was experiencing at Roma, where he wasn't a manager, but he was working more in a kind of ambassadorial.
Ambassador. The thing is that this is the problem with ambassadors, right?
No.
This is why Maldini never wanted to go back to Milan until he got to be a boss, is they figure out what's up. They don't want to be wheeled out there to wave to the crowd and be a yes man. That is what the ambassador role means.
What I thought was quite smart about Roma was they were like, you don't know what you want to do. What do you have a year? You can work with Baldissoni, you can work with Baldini, you can work with Monchi, and then you can figure out
what you're good at.
What you're good at.
Yeah. Right.
Basically, it's like an apprentice like rotation, like doctors, you know, you go in the... But you knew that wasn't going to work. Because he's still Totti wherever he goes. Right? He goes to the commercial department. He's like, oh, get fam. Oh, what is this, right? And the people don't treat him like an apprentice.
Right.
They treat him like Totti.
Did you see that interview with Ilari Blasi, where she says that basically being married to Totti is humiliating because no one even looks at you, which for her must have been a sea change, because everyone's just Totti, Totti. Can you give this message to Totti?
Mm.
Anyway, so well, he's left, and there's a certain amount of bitterness, and it's sad to see a player who gave so much to the club now in less than happy, unhappy terms.
Well, he'll be very curious to see what happens over the next few weeks, where this takeover to go through,
right?
And you know, there be some kind of move to bring him back. Although I think already some of the things that he's been occupying his time with, it looks like he wants to become an agent, wants to represent talented young footballers. He's had a meeting with a big agency in London about that. You know, that does not facilitate someone coming back into a football club.
What do you think something would be worse suited to be an agent than that guy?
I don't know. Anyway, questions about what Francesco is going to do with his future. But whatever he does, he's given football an unparalleled amount of extraordinary memories and moments. Up next on Golazzo, we'll have a look at our favourite Totti memories.
Del Piero, Roberto Baggio. Those names say anything to you?
Not much, to be honest.
Four-time Tour de France champion Chris Froome may not know much about the legends of Italian football, but over at the Cycling Podcast, we can keep you up to date with everything that's going on in the world of professional cycling. If you want to sort the Maglia Rosa from the Rossoneri, tell Geraint Thomas from Francesco Totti, and know the difference between the San Siro and Milano San Remo, the Cycling Podcast is the show for you. Our weekly show covers the whole racing season and goes daily for cycling's three grand tours, kicking off with the Giro d'Italia in May. Subscribe to the Cycling Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and all other good podcast apps, or check out thecyclingpodcast.com.
You're listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show.
To wrap up then, I'll look back at Totti's career. Would you pick out your favourite bits of Totti? Let me start you off with 2006, 26th of November, Roma taking on Sampdoria.
Prova Cassetti a riaprire verso Francesco Totti!
Che grande gol!
Splendido gol di Francesco Totti, che firma la doppietta e chiude la partita.
Was that your favourite Totti goal ever, do you think? That's Totti's on the far left of the area, and at a pretty ridiculous angle, and the ball's put in by Cassetti from the right, and he just hits it first time, a wonderful volley. And the Sampdoria fans even rising to their feet to applaud.
Yeah, from a very acute angle. Yeah, that's a fine goal, James. You didn't choose the lob against Inter.
Well, that's another one that brought a standing ovation from the opposition fans. Yeah.
Totti si è liberato. Pallonetto! Francesco! Totti! Un gol pazzesco! Pazzesco per il 2-0.
We mentioned the pass against Lyon before, and obviously the penalty against Australia, but I'm going to mention something that's not a goal.
Okay.
Although I think, I don't remember, he must have scored them, was the gesture with the four against...
Quattro Papini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, and
so
then,
this
and
is 2004.
This is so good.
And Roma have just beaten Juve at the Stadio Olimpico 4-0. Juve, who I think had won the previous two titles, is that right? With Roma finishing second one of the seasons behind them. And
I think they won one and Milan had maybe won the other.
Yeah, Milan won 2002-03 and Juve won... Milan won 03-04, Juve won 02-03.
Right, but it's Juve. It's grande Juve and...
Igor Tudor.
And Roma have just beaten them 4-0, and Totti does what?
It's just this hand gesture where he holds up his hand and he kind of like wiggles his four fingers. And then he does like, people might say it's like a throat slitting. It's not really throat slitting. He just kind of moves his hand in front of his mouth, kind of like a shut up gesture.
It's like a go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are done. Yeah. Turn a fork in their ass. But you know what? To me, that is Totti because, like,
Sfotto,
yeah, but there's always going to... The reason the appeal is there is because there's always going to have an underdog quality to him. It's ironic. I mean, Maradona had an underdog quality to him as well, right? That is a big part of the appeal. Maybe not within Rome, because obviously Roma aren't... Within his own goldfish bowl, I don't think he realizes this, that I think even for a lot of neutrals, he represented the underdog. In turning down Real Madrid, in battling against Juve and then Inter. You know, so those moments are few and far between when the social order gets subverted.
Right. Although when they did come, they tended to have Totti involved. That goal that he scored, do you remember that absolute blast that he scored? It was a free kick from, I think, Pjanic. This is 2013 against Juventus. And free kick goes in, it comes back out, and he's about 30 yards out, and he just hits it first time, and it's one of those exquisite drives where the ball just goes absolutely arrow straight into the back of the net past Buffon.
The more generic memory for me is also, I mean, James mentioned this 15 minutes on YouTube of him just passing the ball, is him getting the ball in traffic, usually with his back to the guy who's marking him, and this is where it helped that, you know, he had a large rear end. And the fact that as he's getting the ball, he's turning, he turns it, and he hits it first time with accuracy, you know, wherever, whether it's a 10-yard, you know, pass between defenders, or whether it's a chip into space or whatever. I mean, I know it's the ultimate cliche of sport, right? The eyes on the back of your head. But, like, he must have looked beforehand. I never noticed him looking, but I'm sure he must have, because he's not that magical. His brain can't process them, or maybe it could. But to me, that is the iconic thing, is actually maybe even more the passing, more than the goals. But you know what? The goals? He scored more goals with one team than any other person in the history of Italian football. And
he's second on the all-time list. Serie A scorers behind Silvio Piola.
Silvio Piola, who played in the 1920s and 1930s.
307 goals for Roma, 250 of them in Serie A. Yeah,
how many did Piola have?
274 in Serie A, so 24 more in Serie A. Another couple of seasons he'd have done it. I have a few more that I'm going to mention.
I do as well.
Yeah?
I mean, he says the best player he ever played with, in terms of just being on the same wavelength, was Antonio Cassano.
Right.
And
it's just scary, isn't it?
And they would fall out, but again, I implore our listeners to go and search out. There's a YouTube clip called Totti Cassano Telepathy, where all they do, they play 1-2s. It's only them from inside their own half all the way into the penalty area of the opponent's team. I can't remember who it is. I've just looked at it and it's all blurry on my phone. So it looks kind of like Juventus. I don't think it is. It might be Siena. And it is just mind-blowingly good how they keep finding each other, often one touch. And yeah, I think, again, in terms of two geniuses, one more troubled than the other, just speaking the same language from a football point of view, it's magnificent to watch.
Goal against Lazio when he scored the brace in the Derby della Capitale in 2015. La mette in mezzo, secondo palo. Gol pazzesco
di Totti! Whips out his phone.
Yeah, so yes. the second goal, first of all, is just genius, no? Who is it, the first goal?
Where he slides in at the far post and it's a
physical. And it's that kind of ridiculous volley. Did he even need to volley? I don't know, but it's a brilliant goal in the derby against Lazio, who he's the all-time top scorer against.
Well, I mean, when you play against him as many times as he has.
And then he runs to the Curva Sud and one of the Roma staff gives him a phone and he takes the selfie.
I think that was the most, I mean, Roma will correct us if we're wrong about this, because they are social media champs, but I think that was the most retweeted tweet that probably a football team has ever kind of put out, in terms of self-generated content rather than just, we bought this player. That was pretty damn good. Yeah. I also like the one when he was towards the end of his final season, where Spalletti, as Gazzetta put it at the time, kicks the Pope out of the Vatican.
2016,
And he plays against Torino. No, in fact, they...
No, it's Roma-Torino, yeah. So this
and
is
he's on the bench.
So this is... I mean, you can make a case for this being the last great game. And it's interesting how many of these memories come when he's well into his 30s. He's 39 at this point, and it is effectively all over. He's had the injuries. Him and Spalletti have not got on. He's even been removed from the Ritiro, no? A couple of weeks before by Spalletti because he gave an interview that wasn't sanctioned by the club. Anyway, Roma are battling for a top four space and they are 2-1 down at home to Torino. They've got about 5 minutes left in the game. So Spalletti, in total desperation, does the last... He has to turn around to Totti and say, Franche. You know, go and see what you can do. And what can he do with his first touch? He scores... And then a couple of minutes later, he gets the winning goal up from the penalty spot. And again, I mean, the commentary is fantastic from Carlo Zampa.
Goal!
there's famous shots of fans just kind of
in one in particular who's kind of, I wouldn't say made a career since where he's got his phone and he's filming it. Alessio Avalone.
You even know his name?
Yeah, I know him. I've spoken to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I organized the shoot for the World Feed with him where he, because he then was invited to Trigoria to meet Totti. Because Totti was moved by, you know, watching that and has a signed shirt and, you know.
Amazing. Anyway, so, I mean, and they went on to win all four of their remaining games and they finished in the top four and that's all terrific. You mentioned the chip against Inter, which I think, along with the Cucchiaio against Van der Sar at Euro 2000, is probably his most famous goal.
Yeah.
In the 3-2 win away at San Siro, and again, and you see Mancini, who had been Totti's idol as a child, just kind of shaking his head on the sideline. It's incredible.
It's a great team goal he's involved in. In fact, he finishes it off against Milan at San Siro, where Aquilani, of all people, back when Aquilani was good and persuaded Rafa Benitez to spend, 35 million or however much it was on him, has a Rabona. And there's a cross comes in, Totti finishes off with his head.
Yeah.
Poi Rabona, gli aveva preso il tempo Tonetto, dentro il pallone Francesco Totti, splendida azione della Roma, splendida Rabona di Aquilani, 2-1.
Totti was on the pitch when Rodrigo Taddei did the Aurelio as well.
The Aurelio. Mm.
Or was he on the pitch or was he injured? I don't know, but he was still Rodrigo Taddei's teammate when Rodrigo Taddei pulled off the most unbelievable move
in the history. Aurelio. Just for anyone who's not clear on the difference between the Aurelio and, say, the Elastico, what was the Aurelio?
It's this weird thing where I realize the movement of the ball has nothing to do with his foot. I think it's his mind that moves it in a way that's completely nonsensical.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe.
Just mentioning that, actually, Aquilani, one of the nice things about Totti is he's one of the few Italian football legends that hasn't then turned out afterwards to have a bust of Benito Mussolini in his.
That wasn't his. That wasn't Aquilani, though, was it? It was his father,
Well, Aquilani's also.
Yeah, double A is also very much.
He's on board with that whole thing. Yeah, how about this one to finish? That classic futsal moment that did the rounds about a year ago on social media, where some youngster rainbow flicks Francesco and the crowd are all like, "Ooh, have some of that, old man." And Francesco, he doesn't flinch, but the kid doesn't score. And so Francesco just motions to the keeper, "Hey, put it up." And he I wouldn't say he runs downfield, but he runs a little bit. And then he just produces the most outrageous outside of the boot, swerving shot, which slams in. And, you know, that's... As I think the caption on the social media clip has it, "Come at the king, you best not miss."
Game over, as one of his last T-shirts in the derby, famously said.
Damn. Well, game over, and while we wait to hear what's next for Il Capitano, that's it for our Totti retrospective. Many thanks, James, for being with us today, and Gabriele.
Pleasure.
And we look forward to joining you again on our next Golazzo, whatever that might touch upon. Hope you've enjoyed these shows from Rome's greatest ever player. And from all of us here, it's arrivederci. Campionato di
calcio italiano. You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production. And for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Join Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, Tom Nugent, and a whole host of great guests each week on Paddy Power's new racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth. Tune in for analysis, interviews, and a bit of crack from the greatest trio since the Bee Gees. Ha, 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 ha. From the Horse's Mouth. From the Horse's Mouth. Ha, ha, yeah.
Muddy Knees Media.